Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, Richard Herring here. How'd you like the casual House of Games double trophies in the background of the video, guys? Pretty cool, right? Welcome to another Rahulastapa. And we've got an amazing guest for you. It's the brilliant genius Tim Minchin. Check out his TV show Upright, which we barely talked about. It's really good. Look, we're doing loads of live shows. They're coming up really soon. In fact, they're starting in London on March the 9th with Michael Palin and Ashlyn B. It's all sold out, so you can't come to that one. March the 16th, we've got Nish Kumar and Ian and Barry from the Parapod movie. There are very few tickets left for that one. March the 23rd, we have Izzy Sooty. She's brilliant and has yet to be announced in my brain. It might be out by the time you get to this. Check richtown.com/gigs for all info on these. And March the 30th, not yet confirmed the guest. There's someone very exciting who's a quiz show host who I hope we've got for that one. And we're going for some crazy big names. You never know who we're going to end up with. And also, April the 6th, we have got Lolly Adafopi and Adam and Joe. Adam Buxton, Joe Cornish, together at last. They said they'd never work together again, but they've come back for me. These shows will all go up online. That one is sold out as well, of course. March 28th, I am in Birmingham. Guest yet to be announced. Also sold out. Huge theatre. Thank you so much, Birmingham, for your support. Norwich, April the 25th. Also sold out. Thanks for your support, Norwich. You guys are great. No guests yet announced for those. That's how we like it. London, stop waiting for the guests. Just come and book your tickets. It's worth booking ahead. Badgers get the news on the guests first. If you're not a Badger, just book some tickets for those remaining gigs in London. We are planning on doing more later in the year. Just keep on checking richtown.com/gigs. There's a load more at the Square Theatre in October and November. I think those are the dates. Yes, they are. Every Monday in October and November, you can start penciling that in. And we will do a few more around the country as well, I believe. So do keep supporting us if you can, either by coming to see the shows or going to gofasterstrike.com/badges and becoming a badger, or go to gofasterstrike.com and buy the emergency question books. That will help us fund more podcasts. The Trump card game, very enjoyable. That will help us do more podcasts too. We have big plans this year. So if you can afford £3 a month to give us for a badge and in return for 8 podcasts a month, seems pretty good value to me, then that will help us make more relatives and this sitcom we're going to do later in the year or early in 2021. It's all looking good. There's also a gig on the March 24th at the O2. It's not even in the Indigo Room. It's in the Blue Room. That's usually just where people hang out and have a drink. It's not a lot of tickets. It's only for O2 customers. Go to your priority app and register your interest, and you hopefully might win some tickets to see me talk to James Acaster. Come on. Those are some pretty good podcasts coming up. All of that will end up on the regular feed for people who aren't O2 customers. Yeah, it's looking pretty good. So thank you for your support. Feels like this is my year. That's what I'm going for, 2020. And I hope something really terrible happens to me in about a week's time, just to add real dramatic irony to my hubristic excitement there. Anyway, have you got two House of Games trophies? I don't think so. There's not many people who've got two of them, and I'm one of the only ones, my fan friends. No pointless trophy there, though. Anyway, let's crack on and relax. It's 4 minutes in. Come on, that's crazy. People are going to be furious in the comments, and then I will delete them if they say what time they have to start listening and watching. You've been great. Thank you very much. Hope you're enjoying these fantastic podcasts. I can't remember doing them. It was so long ago. Why am I talking even longer? It's Rahulastapa with Timothy... I want to say Christopher Minchin. It's going to bother me that I've got his middle name wrong. Enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has been lauded in the Spectator magazine this week. It's Richard Herring. Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah. Right, you're much better than last week's audience. Welcome, my fan friends, to Richard Herring's Lexic, Sexic, Texic podcast. You've got to come up with a new thing for podcasts. So many podcasts. I've decided to exit from all words beginning with L, S, and T, like lexicon. I'm going to leave lexicon, sex, and Texas. Don't have to have X in them, but it's better if they do. And I'm going to leave them by the 31st of October 2019. Get or I'll be... And if I'd rather be dead in a ditch than that happening. I know you listen at home, you're thinking, that's a long time ago. Well, it was in 3 days' time when I... But I was talking to a bunch of chunky, bearded men who work in IT and stay away from social situations the other day. They call it Rahulastapa. I don't know what's going to happen. I had a big interview with the Spectator magazine, right, which is... I was a bit nervous about doing it. It's a slightly... fascist tone, and it's a magazine for fascists, and they were quite nice about me. They said I was the podcast king, or the usual sort of stuff they say about me. They did say off stage he seems like a man replaying an argument with himself. I mean, that doesn't sound like me, does it? So that's... I don't think they've got there. But they weren't as nice about you as they were about me. And I just want to... So that thing I said was that... He said, built on a fan base of chunky bearded men who stay away from social situations, who work in IT, if you didn't have many friends, you'd probably like Richard Herring. That's what they're saying about you. I mean, I want to prove him wrong, but I'm looking at the front row and it's... And you're not a chunky bearded man who works in IT, are you, madam? What do you do for a living? You're a math teacher. That's a very... Is this one of your students you're with here? I approve of that wholeheartedly. It's fantastic work. So there you go, the Spectator. How many people would classify themselves, just by cheering, as a chunky bearded man who stay away from social situations? Cheer now. Okay. Yeah, well, if you were that afraid of social situations, you wouldn't have joined in with that cheering. This is a very social situation. We all hang around afterwards. What's your name, madam?
Caroline.
Caroline, lovely to meet you. We all go for a drink afterwards if you fancy it. Yeah? We could do some sums. We talk about calculus. I've forgotten how to do it, but I've got 2 A-level maths, so...
I can bring my student.
You can bring the student, yeah, that's fine. It's quite dark, so I can't see if he's younger than you or not.
You, what, who are you?
I'm her nephew.
You're her nephew, yeah. That's the way. That's the way. Well done, mate. If she's that good at teaching maths, she's going to do very well. Good, thanks. What's your name?
Indigo.
Indigo?
Yeah.
We were just talking, me and Tim Minchin were just talking about backstage about the colour indigo. We were talking about, I asked him the emergency question, what's your favourite colour for the backstage interview? He said, magenta. And I said how I thought indigo gets a bad rap because it's in the rainbow, but nothing's coloured indigo, is it, in the world? It's one of the main seven, but you never go, oh, there's something indigo. It's like, what, like my four-year-old daughter knows the word indigo, but when do you ever fucking use that? Apart from someone thought, oh, let's name a child. That were you a bit purple when you were born? Yeah. That's how you couldn't breathe. Tim's daughter's called Violet, so it must have been worse for her. So. Good. I don't need to write any jokes, Tim. I told you it would just come up. Well, good luck with Caroline, your maths teacher. Mrs. Harris, as you call her. We'll crack straight on. Thank you. I wanted to prove that guy wrong. You fuckers. You bearded fuckers. For people at home, it's a very mixed audience, and there are some women here. There's at least three women here. I can see three. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's because Tim Minchin's on today. So they're very excited. Will you please welcome my guest this week? He's probably best known for telling students how best to live their lives whilst wearing a funny hat. It is Tim Minchin, ladies and gentlemen. You were wearing a funny hat and a funny cloak.
You're a funny hat.
Yeah, you weren't mic'd up when you're telling me I was a funny hat.
You're a funny hat.
How are you, Tim?
Good. Look how young you were.
I was 40. Well, I was probably about 42 in the photo.
Good. How are you? That was good. That was a good start.
It was
Indigo
all right.
Indigo and his anti-maths teacher.
Yeah, it was worked out well. Sometimes you just get that bit of luck, don't you?
Yeah.
Bit of luck
Someone
in the
Someone having sex with their family. luck. Didn't see that coming.
Third appearance on... Yep. We were discussing the backstage. Number one, I think 114, and number 250-something. It's not quite, but nearly...
I'm nearly the tent poles that hold this fucking thing.
Yeah.
I am. I'm just slightly skew if in the centre.
Yeah. So, we can keep going, but you have to come back in about another 140.
I think you should stop.
Yeah, you did say that.
Not just so I appear to be a bookend, but just for everyone's good.
I should do. It's, when you're getting a bloke back for the third time, you've got to think,
let these beardy men go. Somewhere to socialise.
It's just getting successful, Tim, after 8
years. Is it really?
It's just...
Is you starting to get some numbers?
Just starting to get people in.
You cracked the 30.
Just cracked.
Good. I feel like we're quite a long way apart. Do we need to be
in.
So far apart?
I don't know. Probably something
to do with
the cameras.
Feels a bit performative.
Come on over.
Tell me, if you're a camera person, this is becoming a problem.
They can move the cameras. I don't know. Did we have these chairs last time you were here? These are relatively new.
This have you spent your budget?
We spent our money on this. Good. So, what brings you to the United Kingdom, Tim?
I'm touring.
Yeah.
Again.
How's it
first
going?
First time in a long time. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
It's good. I like playing music on stage and swearing.
Anyone come? If people come into.
People come. Yeah.
Still...
People come.
Can you make a living from doing stand? Do you have to do another job in the day?
I just don't. I wrote Matilda and none of it matters. I didn't write Matilda and all of it matters. It's the nature of comedy. It's the opposite of the truth. But it's really, really good fun. And I do actually have this quite often on stage. I have this moment in the UK where I feel quite genuinely like, holy fuck, people just... I went away for 8 years and then... I haven't toured really in the UK since the orchestra show, and they just came back. It's lovely.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
That's good.
Yay, YouTube, for keeping me alive, I suppose.
Yeah. So you, since we last, we had kind of a difficult year professionally.
When did we talk last?
We talked in 20. So no, it was just before Brexit because I think you predicted that.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be no Brexit. And that Donald,
and
Trump,
that Donald
wouldn't,
Trump wouldn't get in. Yeah.
And something else as well.
Yeah, something else. Fuck. Right.
So I think it was just before, so 2016, so there's been a little water under the
bridge. 2016?
Yeah.
Right.
Because it was before, that was, right?
Yeah, so have
it's 3 years.
We must have already talked about my film closing down, or maybe not.
No, I don't think we did. I think that was, I think it was still ongoing. So you'd written a DreamWorks
film. Oh, I was doing Robin Hood.
Yeah.
When we spoke last, yeah.
Yeah.
So that went well.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Robin Hood was like the most successful of the things I was doing. It was the most famous flop of the last. Anyway, yeah, so I was making an animated film and that got shut down. And then Groundhog Day went to Broadway and that got shut down. And then I moved to Sydney and felt depressed for a while. And now I'm doing lots of stuff.
Yeah. You'd put a lot of time into Larrikin's, right? And you'd made three quarters of it or something like that.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And then they just decided that they didn't. It's new people took over and they didn't.
I don't know. What the question is that I guess I'll never know the answer to because Americans don't tell the truth. I mean, they do, but they treat artists in that world, in the Hollywood world, the executives treat artists as this sort of thing to manipulate rather than them peers. They're like, what monkeys do we hire to do this thing? And then how do we make the monkey not cross? It's more like that. And so it's very hard to get straight answers, and I'm actually very interested in straight answers, giving them as well. And I spent 4 years on the film, and I ended up directing it, and it was, huge, beautiful. It was a $90 million DreamWorks musical with singing animals, Australian Hugh Jackman and...
Yeah,
you know, all that, Jackie Weaver and Margot Robbie and Naomi Watts and Ben Mendelsohn, all the Aussies doing voices, and Hans Zimmer was doing the score with me. And it was pretty cool and really hard work. And it's hard to talk about losing a... Like, obviously, making an animated film is such a sort of obtuse privileged thing to be allowed to do, and the loss of it is not something anyone can go, that must feel like this. It's very odd. Yeah. But it really is like it's like spending 4 years building a full-sized house out of matchsticks, but you've had to hew the matchsticks yourself, like, and invent wood first. Like, you're literally just going, well, my friend Harry Cripps wrote this script, and then we developed it, and then there's people drawing sketches of characters, and then you're taking videos of movement, and you just build it bit by bit until you're having full meetings about the surface of a feather or the way eucalyptus leaves hang and the way light hits eucalyptus. I mean, there is the level of sort of fidelity is infinite. It's actually really exciting and very, very tedious and, well, everything. But we were at the stage where you could watch a 3D, fully surfaced, fully digitally lit song with Hugh Jackman's voice in it and whole bits of these beautifully developed characters by, you know, French animators and all that. And then when Universal Pictures bought DreamWorks, the question I'll never know the answer to is, did they get a team of experts in animation, animated musicals, and go, you know, this one's not going to work? In fact, I do know the answer. They didn't. they genuinely didn't. They bought the studio, and Universal also in another animation studio, which is run by a guy called Chris Meledandri, who's one of the great geniuses of the form, who made the little yellow guys and all that. What are those fuckers called?
Minions.
And he's a genius. But
let's call them the little yellow fuckers. Me and the little yellow fuckers.
And those movies are great. And they said to Chris Meledandri, what do you think of this film? And Chris went, I don't know. And they just went, well, we'll shut it down. And it was like $45 million in and 110 people working on it or whatever. And fully recorded. Yeah, it's crazy. The thing that made me depressed, Groundhog Day was probably actually more brutal. Broadway is brutal in a different way. I just, the loss of time, the things I could have been doing in that time, just, I couldn't get over that. That was a pervasive thought. I could have been doing this or that, because I'm quite sort of an agitated person who likes making things, and to have 4 years of making things put in the trash seemed vandalism.
And there's just no way that that someone might come in and say, hey, we've spent all this money, let's finish it off.
Yeah, well, so
let's finish off for another 25 quid at least. Yeah. Just have some really good bits and then
exactly.
Now what happens?
So that, yeah, leave them wanting more.
Do some glove puppets.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. Netflix wanted to buy it, Animal Logic wanted to buy it, and Universal, the short stories, Universal made it completely non-viable to buy.
Right.
And when I asked one of the executives why you would take something that you've already used as a write-off against the expense of the studio, which is basically what they did, they just took something that was a risk and went, if we just take that $45 million already spent and that $45 million still to spend and all those people, and we take it from the risk column because we don't know if it will succeed because we've never made a musical and we don't know what that is. If we put it in the column of like stuff we get to write off legally against the purchase of the $3.7 billion purchase of the studio, then it's a plus. Yeah. One phone call. It's pretty gross, but, you know, fuck, people have worse problems. As I say on stage when I talk about this in my tour, I think the very definition of privilege is like having a big sad because someone shut down your $100 million car. Your $100 million cartoon. But it's relative, right? It's my fucking $100 million cartoon. But, yeah. So Jimmy, one of the execs, said, he said, well, it's schmuck insurance. I said, how can you say... I said, sell it to Netflix or sell it. He went, yeah, we'll sell it to them for the full cost of what we spent on it, plus the cost of the software, which they'd have to lease off us because it's unique DreamWorks software, right. Plus the cost of retraining the animators to use that software, plus we would demand that we take, you know, 50, 40, whatever percent of any profit. And right. I'm like, well, no one's going to do that, bro. Like, it's hard enough to make any profit off an animated film anyway.
Sure.
And he went, yeah. And I went, what do you mean? He went, well, it's schmuck insurance. And I went, what he meant was, I look like a schmuck if you make money off it. So we're going to kill it dead.
Yeah.
That's what the subtext was.
I mean, it's show business is a very tough business, and you've had a lot of success. I mean, that's...
Well, I totally think of it like that. Yeah. I go, the amount of luck I have had, I am still due a lot of unluck.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's hard to see that when you're in it, because you think, but I've worked... But it's bullshit. It's bullshit. Yeah. It is pure freaking luck that I've had Matilda and my, you know, as I say in my show, that I was misdiagnosed as a comedian for all those years and that seemed to work. And then I had some unluck. But the trouble is when the mechanism of unluck is psychopathic humans, it's you have to see them just as cells of unluck. You know, just like you have to see all the things that are terrible in the world as... if you take a macro view, the only way I can get my head around evil or yucky stuff in the world is to think of the world as an organism of which some cells are cancerous. And, you know, so if you think about that and then come into, like, just psychopathic execs, it's all just like, yeah, of course there's some shitty cells.
Yeah. And it seems like leaving LA was good for you and going back to Sydney. Yeah.
Were always going to do that. Yeah. I didn't have the film shut down and then waddle home. The Sydney 2018 was the aim for years since before we left England.
Yeah.
So we were going to get the film done. In fact, the film was going slow, so I was going to be facing commuting from Sydney to LA for the year. We still had to go on it, but didn't have to do that in the end. No. There was a moment when they shut it down where, oh, thank God. Because it's relentless, you know.
Yeah. I wish someone would shut down my Radio 4 sitcom so I didn't have to write it, but... sort of, that's how now you feel. It's the same, it's sort of the same, except that my problem is I haven't really done any of the work yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got a month to do it. But I'd probably be all right.
It's very similar, though.
Yeah.
You're an animated character. You look like you could have been drawn by an eccentric Frenchman. It's not realistic, but it's beautiful.
And you've done some other things. You've been in Squinters, which I presume is about... Is people going to work masturbating on the way to work, is it? That's what
work,
it's about.
Work, yeah. commuter tosses. Yeah, Squinters is a little thing written by friends of mine that it was... I sort of was very glad to be asked to do it, and it was... filmed in one day. So we did 6 episodes in one. Like, the whole thing was filmed in one day. Did a couple of rehearsals a few days before, and then just filmed and filmed and filmed, because the whole show was just all these divergent stories, and our story was one story, and we filmed for 14 hours, and I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. So if you watch that show, I can't talk, but luckily we filmed it chronologically, and at the end he has a breakup and gets very upset, so I'm like, oh, God. So it sort of worked, but yeah.
Okay.
It's a good day. I got to kiss Andrea Dimitriades, who's incredibly beautiful. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Was it for the show or just...
No, she, no, she, no. Passed. She just passed out at the end of the day, and I just kissed her.
And
she was asleep.
You also played the Blue Wiggle in Orange Is the New Brown. I'm obsessed with the Wiggles, and you played the Blue Wiggle in I'm guessing in a sketch show. Is it
this? Yeah. Do you know Nazim Hussain? He's
not. No.
Anyway, Australian comedian, amazing.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Australia.
So Squinters.
I don't believe Australia exists.
No.
I'm one
should
of those
you.
Guys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and I've
flat.
Been there, and I still don't believe.
This is a conspiracy. That quokka, that kangaroo is a conspiracy. Naz is a great Australian stand-up, Sri Lankan Aussie, and somehow one of the networks, somehow he convinced Channel 9, which is like a terrestrial network that usually does like, hey, that they'd let this Sri Lankan Aussie do a sitcom about racism, basically.
Okay.
And we all played the Wiggles, and he was the long-lost brown Wiggle, yeah. So, but that's been a great thing about moving back to Australia is that Squinters and Orange Is the New Brown are both things that usually I'm fully in control of everything I do. Like, I'm... But now people just go, come and do this. And I go, yeah, that'd be great. As a sort of, like, trying to be part of the vibe.
Yeah. Cool. Hmm. And what was what went wrong with the Robin Hood?
Robin Hood's all right. I mean,
I haven't seen it.
Well, Otto,
I didn't really notice it coming out, but I've got two young kids. Did anyone see the Robin Hood with Tim as Friar Tuck? Yeah, you're his fans.
Yeah,
and so was it good?
Yeah, was amazing.
Tim was amazing. Yeah, I think I'm spotting
a little bit of bias.
I'm spotting some bias.
Jamie Foxx was shit. Tim can act. It's a very interesting thing, and I don't know how much I should say about it because I don't want to be disloyal to, because it was made by good people and produced by a LA friend of mine. The reason I got in the movie is because the producer, Jen Davison, I got in the movie because I was right for the part, I suppose, but I wouldn't have been noticed except that the producer was a mum at my kid's school. It's such a Hollywood story, and we were going trick-or-treating. It's very relevant. A few years ago, and Jen's like, that's Violet's dad. He's kind of quirky looking. Like, and so she rang Otto Bathurst, who was the originating director on Peaky Blinders and Black Mirror. So he's like hot, and who was the director of this Robin Hood, and went, have you heard of Tim Minchin? And he's English, so he had, and just went, that's Friar Tuck. And sure. And it seemed as obvious. Actually, the script was written by another friend of mine, but then he got moved on in the way that writers get moved off their own projects in Hollywood, and another writer. And in the end, I think I can say without upsetting anyone, any of the people who made the film who are massive fans of your podcast.
I'm the lot. That, I mean, I'm amazed I didn't get Friar Tuck. That's all I'm saying.
No. Yeah. Yeah. No.
This is more Friar Tuck. I can shave my hair.
Yeah. You look spiritual.
Yeah.
But it just... What amazes me is that you can go into production on a $100 million film like Robin Hood without a script that everyone's happy with. But it's the way it goes, because all these things, scripts in LA are just one element of this massive thing. Really, it's like, do we have the stars? Are they available? Do we have the studio? Have we built the set? Because on a film like a reboot of Robin Hood or King Arthur or one of these other, trying to make more money out of old properties, the thing is, like, how do we make it look so good that it competes with Avengers? You know, their heads are in all that. Like, how do we compete with Marvel? And how do we compete with Star Wars? So it's going to look amazing. And meanwhile, the script's like, I think we do a draft. And it's just not... I don't give a fuck how big your movie is. I think your script is... the only thing that fucking matters until it's right. And that's why I'll never work in Hollywood, because I just can't. You know, my agent over there's like, well, just get on board as a producer, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do anything that I can't. That and that's why I've gone home and why I'm back to touring is because I just don't want to do anything that I can't go, why? Well, I think that should get made now.
Yeah. You know? It seems, that does seem weird to me that doing films is a lot of people's sort of holy grail, and like a lot, most Hollywood films are not as good as any of the things that the people who end up being in them are doing already.
Yeah, that's right. What is it? It's just that at a certain price point, there are a whole lot of executives who have never made anything who are scared.
Yeah.
When I say never made anything, I mean they're good producers and good executives, but they've never fucking made anything. So they don't know whether it's going to be a good singing animal movie or whether it's going to be a good Robin Hood. They might be really good people, but mostly they're scared because they're like, oh, my God, someone's giving me $100 million.
Yeah.
Fuck, maybe that script. Fire that guy. Get that guy. And it's just a shit show.
Yeah. And how, for you, you know, coming, your rise to fame was pretty rapid, and then you went even more famous and even more famous, and you're going to Hollywood. How was it for you as little Timmy Minchin inside there? Working alongside Hollywood stars and being part of that, did you feel like this is what I was born to do?
Or well,
do
you what's feel your like, experience of that?
I mean, I've never, but
you have met people.
I've met them.
You have met and
I'm still very excited. I've met you and I'm excited.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't so excited when you weren't in Robin Hood, but now you're in Robin Hood. I'm very excited to meet you.
You've met people that you went, fuck, I'm meeting that person. And what's the experience of it?
Well, I'm still feeling this. I think if you plonked me in the middle of a Hollywood blockbuster and I was acting in it, I'd be all the way through. I'd be going, fucking hell, it's Jamie Foxx. What's going on? And then they go, can you just say the lines that in the script? And I go,
but let me say this.
Come on, do you understand what's happening here?
I don't know. No. I mean, I've been acting for... I was an actor long before I was a comedian. Sure. I was just a bad... I mean, I'm still a bad one, but I was a failed one. And I have to... I think I want to say, without sounding like a tool, it's probably that horse has bolted, that I don't... It's just not... every now and then I meet someone, I go, huh, but it lasts about 2 seconds, you know, because... It's a totally redundant thing to say, but they're obviously all just little Tommy Cruise and little Sandy Bullock and, you know, like, they're all just humans.
Yeah.
And I just weirdly don't feel... I think that's a great privilege of being brought up in the most isolated capital city in the world, going to a sort of nice school and being brought up by strict but kind parents, and just... I sort of, on one hand, never believed... I mean, I literally left Perth at the age of 27, already married, thinking maybe one day I'll be able to write a score for a play at the Malthouse Theatre in Melbourne, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean that like maybe, but maybe someone will pay me to play piano, but like at 28, so I was like, one day I'm going to be on Broadway. I'm absolutely rooted in that, and I still feel very strongly that my career is a fluke, and that I've taken my opportunities and worked hard at them. But on the other hand, I just don't give a shit who you are. Yeah. I just don't. I just don't know why. Maybe that's an entitled Perth middle class upbringing thing where there just wasn't anyone to be scared of. But I mostly don't feel cowed by people.
I think that's interesting. I think, like, some people go to Hollywood and get so into it and sort of change and become those people. And
well,
I don't think that's...
People love meeting famous people.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people love meeting... Y'all name drop all fucking... I love the people I've got to meet.
Yeah.
But I don't know. In the end, I tend not to pursue it. I don't know why. I think mostly... I went to a what's the big ball in New York where the mean lady who likes costumes runs?
The 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, that she's like that. She's Meryl Streep plays her in a film.
Anna Wintour.
Met ball. I went to the Met ball once when Matilda was opening in New York, and the Downton Abbey girls were there, and they were fucking great. But I got sat next to tiny Christina Ricci, and she was actually ended up being great. And then there was a model and a basketball player and a model and a basketball player or something, Christina Ricci, and me. And I just felt, and this is where the, like, maybe I'll be able to play in a piano bar guy comes up. I'm just sitting there going, I have two concurrent thoughts. One is, I am an ugly, gross man. I'm surrounded by beautiful, wealthy people. Christina fucking Ricci is gorgeous and, like, doing, you know, the chin up kind of making sure she's, in case someone takes a photo. And I'm like, these people don't want to fucking talk. I've got nothing to say. I'm utterly unfunny. I just feel disgusting. And at the same time, I'm thinking, oh, my God, these people have nothing to say. Like, they do not deserve to be sitting. Like, yeah. Like, not that, but, like, oh, my, like, a feeling of 100% inferiority and significant superiority at the same time. And I went through the night and eventually got drunk enough and found the Downton Abbey girls, and that was quite fun. And then they wanted to meet Beyonce, so I got to meet Beyonce. But I went home and went, I'm never doing that again. That made me feel like the worst version of myself.
Sure.
I feel like needy and gross, and I can just see where that fucking leads.
Yeah, well, but it's interesting because I think for some people they go that way and then they leave
behind.
I'm
going to win in that.
Yeah, and I'm friends with all these people and that's all that matters, and then the art and the work they've put in falls away. That's not important.
This is what happened to Stuart Lee.
It is, yeah.
He got all wrapped up, didn't he?
Oh.
Head in the clouds.
Yeah. Married a model.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Right, I think you and me should write a musical together. I've got an idea for... You're going to have to do most of the work because I'm a bit lazy. You know you did Groundhog Day based on the film?
Yeah.
I've had an idea.
I'm so excited.
Have you ever seen the film Shrek? Why don't we do a... It's the plot of the movie Shrek.
There's two reasons. One, it's a DreamWorks movie. I know all the guys who made it, and it's DreamWorks. It's too much pain for me.
Okay.
Two, it's already a musical.
Yeah, no, I know. But we just do it. We do it.
Produced by a very good friend of mine.
Do a different one.
It could do with being rewritten.
I could do. Fair. I've started for you. Shrek comes on. Hello, I am Shrek. That's the beginning. And then you take it on from there. And like 50-50.
Yeah, split. Yeah. I think if that's the quality you're going for, we could have it written by the end of the night. If you're happy with that opening line.
Do you think Groundhog Day would have worked better if you'd had a Shrek in it?
It's sort of the same character, isn't it?
Yeah.
Phil Connors and Shrek. He's a curmudgeon who can't see the beauty in the world and needs to learn how to see it. It's the same. There's only fucking three stories in the world, and they all have you in the centre of them.
It's good. I saw Groundhog Day. It was good.
Good?
It was good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the problem, like, Matilda's so good.
Yeah. Groundhog Day is better. Groundhog Day is better for adults, but it's more complicated. It takes we made a terrible miscalculation with musicals cost like 80 quid to go see or 60 quid or whatever. And Groundhog Day is better if you've seen it four times and people just don't have that cash. No, Groundhog Day was very successful in London and won awards and stuff and then went to... There's lots of reasons why Groundhog Day didn't work in New York and almost none of them are anything to do with the show.
Sure.
But I like Groundhog Day a lot.
Yeah.
But Matilda... And the weird thing is I'm just starting working on another musical and it's definitely... If you get a thing like... So writing a musical... I should say Dennis Kelly and Matthew Warchus made Matilda. I just wrote some fucking songs. But you get a stroke of luck. Like, it's lightning in a fucking bottle. And the people who worked on Matilda are just all at the top of the game. And it worked out well. And it happens once in a generation. I'm Billy Elliot, you know, where a family musical can run and run and run. And once you've been involved in something like that, you've got a couple of choices. One is try for the rest of your life to have another one.
Yeah.
And the other is go... Don't have to try for that anymore, and it does. It does. It is writing a musical that's a hit does give you enough financial security to not be so much under pressure. And I have decided very consciously that I'm completely disinterested in aiming for another 10-year running musical. It's an absurd thing to aim for anyway. I mean, that's when you start going wrong. That's when you become those fearful execs going, "How do we make Robin Hood as popular as Star Wars?" You're just not going to it. And the chances of you making a Robin Hood as successful as 1 in 100 and you're going for that, you're like, it's bullshit. So Groundhog Day was deliberately more complex and interesting and the next one's going to be almost inaccessible.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm interested in the form.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in a lot of musicals and I'm no fucking snob. I can't read music. I ain't trying to be Sondheim, but I'm only interested in musicals to the extent that they are an interesting form to try and do cool stuff with.
Yeah.
And if I'm not going to do that, then I've got other things. I can go on tour or, like, do a TV show.
Sure. Well, it's true. And it's also, I mean, I find that fascinating, and as someone who's writing stuff as well, that people get to that stage when they've got that complete financial security and yet they still churn out stuff that is, you know, increasingly...
Populist
to make money, and you kind of think, why wouldn't you just at least do every other one? Just do something really weird. You know, you can do whatever. You've got to the point where you can do whatever you want.
No, so, like, true. I want to talk about Richard Curtis without at all because I love him. I think he's not only an incredible writer, but one of the most amazing people. Like, he literally spends 50% of every year just working on charity and comic relief. You know, like, he's an amazing, ethical, beautiful, funny guy. But he's not trying to write Four Weddings and Notting Hill because they were commercially successful and he's going, it's what he writes like that. He doesn't want to be fucking Beckett. He wants to write beautifully constructed. So he's written Yesterday. And it's not because he's trying, it's how he writes, right? Whereas Matilda, for both Dennis and I, was probably like, I wonder what it'd be like to try and do a Roald Dahl story, but it's not our thing.
No.
You know, and I've been asked to do many children's musicals since, and I've said no, because I don't self-identify as a primarily children's artist.
No. Were you excited when Alan Sugar opened an episode of The Apprentice on the Matilda set? Did that make you excited when you saw that? Did you know that had happened?
Nope. I don't really know who Alan Sugar is, and I don't really know what The Apprentice is.
He's like the...
I think Donald Trump was The Apprentice.
Donald Trump was The American Apprentice.
Yeah, and whatever happened to him?
I don't know. Presumably Alan Sugar is. I've tweeted Alan Sugar a lot over the years. So, the only time he ever replied to me was when Trump got in and I said, "Do you think you're going to be the next Prime Minister?" And he said, "No." That was it. Other than that,
he was right.
It's hard to reply to me.
Yeah.
But the candidate, you're standing on the set of Matilda, and then all the bookcases come in, and the candidates all go, "Ooh."
Why did they use that set?
Because they were doing. What were they doing? I mean, toys. Children's toys.
So it's a good set for that.
Yeah. He probably got some money off of that.
I doubt it. I'd say we got some PR.
Yeah.
And so we got some advertising.
Right, I'm going to ask you some new emergency questions that we haven't asked you before.
Okay. How's this going, by the way? Is this all right?
I'm loving it. I don't know about the rest of them.
Yeah. Fuck those. I don't know. It's quite. It's meant to be quite funny, isn't it?
Well, it can be, but we've done some fun. Like, you know, once you've done a couple of funny ones, we can take. We can do a serious one.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm two newspapers have called me the best interviewer in the country now.
Well, they're both
so
very right wing.
They were. And
something that's
it's mainly because I hate poor people, and I just put that in screen. Do you agree that poor people are horrible?
I don't hate them. I just think it's their fault.
Okay.
Need to work harder.
Here's a new emergency question for you that I definitely haven't asked you. If you all the art galleries and museums in the world decide that you are allowed to take one item from one of the museums and keep it for yourself, what one painting or piece of exhibition from a museum or anything, piece of history, would you take home with you if you could have from any museum?
In Hobart, in the Museum of Old and New Art, which is one of the best modern art museums in the world, there's a sort of robotic working cloaca that shits every couple of hours.
Okay, I like that.
Don't want that. can I have a sculpture that's been bought by the Singaporean government?
Yes, definitely.
There's a Salvador Dali sculpture in Singapore in a foyer of a commercial building called Newton or something. Does anyone know it? He's got a hole in his chest and a round sphere hanging. Anyway, it's just
sounds like all sculptures in the world.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, it's beautifully proportioned. Yeah. But that shows that I don't know shit about art because I suppose I should take something classical. I don't want fucking Mona Lisa.
But it could be anything. It doesn't have to be anything. I like La Pietà that's in that's my favourite sculpture of Jesus being cradled by Mary. It's in the Vatican or somewhere, or St. Paul's or Peter, whatever it's called in Rome.
When he's just off the cross or when he's a baby?
Yeah, he's off the cross. It's a bit out of proportion. He's all dead on her.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he's loved. No, it's beautiful.
And
he looks
hot in
that. That's his good side.
Yeah.
No, the light was good
and
that
And he's
day.
Slightly winking because he knows he's coming back. You know,
yeah, so. He's... Is it the prostitute or his mum?
I think it's his mum, but, you know, that's confusing, isn't it?
Was his mum there or the prostitute?
I think it's his mum in the
Bibli?
And also Mary Magdalene wasn't a prostitute. That's just a...
No, she was just a woman without a husband, which is as good as...
She liked washing people's feet with her hair. That's not...
Yeah, in that book, it's indistinct, just like virgin meant maiden.
Yeah. I don't need to tell you.
Sultanas. So it's mistranslations all over the shop. I like Dali. I know it's very sort of, you know, uni student of me, but I also like Jesus's 3D cross Jesus. Yeah. Dali's Jesus crucifixion thingy. Well, he did a few of them, actually.
You can have those. That's sorted
out. Thank you very
much. It's actually a power that's been granted me. I'm allowed to give.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's nice. Like, they'll be waiting for you when you get home.
A lot of
it's the people who choose things that aren't worth much money are really kicking themselves. Two people have got the Mona Lisa so far, so, you know, it's going to be some fun. There are a couple of them knocking about, though, so it's okay. Mm. Have you ever been refused entry to a country?
How did I do that? Just like,
have you spilled wine on my lovely shirt, my lovely...
Fuck your couch. Look at my pants. That was just weird. It's like a hole appeared in my... Ask me the question.
Have you ever been refused entry to a country? I've never asked anyone that question. I don't remember writing it.
No. I've never been refused entry to a country.
Right. I met a girl on holiday once. Where was I?
Mm.
I was in
Here
Thailand. And she was an Aussie, I think.
Did she refuse you entry?
No, she didn't.
This is where this story is going.
She did.
It's a bawdy story.
She'd been refused entry. She'd gone to America and then they'd found out she had a drug conviction. She was going there, had a big holiday in America planned. And then she wasn't allowed into America, so she came to Thailand instead, where I met her and walked her up the beach and walked her back down the beach, and then we both went.
Asked her some benign questions. I mean, getting into America is a bit of a punish. You have to stand there for 3 hours and then have a grumpy person ask you questions, but they've never turned me away.
Good.
I don't have any interesting things about me.
Have you never been convicted of anything?
No. Have you?
No, I mean, I got away with all my stuff. I still pick a mix. If America hears about that, they won't let me in.
No, totally.
We'll have to edit that out. In case of America, I don't want to go to.
Are you going to America?
No, I don't want to
go. You've never been to America?
I have been to America, but since Trump's got in, I don't really want to go there till he's not there anymore.
That was another big thing about leaving. Yeah. It's this palpable sense of get me the fuck out of here. It's just crazy.
And is Australia a safe place to go in those? Because the UK is not a safe place to go in
those
terms.
Have a fundamentalist Christian prime minister.
Yeah.
But I don't know, we just dig primary resources out of Aboriginal land and sell it to China, we're fine. You know? Like, it's a funny thing, Australians, that there's a lot about Australia that's very nice. I'm hyper aware of the fact, I'm like, God, places should just be a bit more like Australia. Our health system has a balance between private and public and everyone gets health, but people can pay for insurance and our education system's really, really good. And then I go, yeah, that's because we control immigration despotically and we dig unsustainable primary resources out of Aboriginal land. And we, we can do all that because we're rich and heartless. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's lovely.
It's quite short term. I had George Monbiot on quite recently.
I would have loved to have seen that.
It was yesterday.
How was
it? For me, it was yesterday. It was really good, but it's depressing as hell because, you know,
he's pretty depressing.
We have to. I mean, he was a very good interviewee, but the message is not very good.
When I say he's depressing, what's so depressing is when smart people are feeling really pessimistic, you go, fuck.
Yeah.
Any optimism I have must be because I'm too dumb to see it.
Yeah.
And I don't have fucking much. So either I'm quite smart or I'm just...
Well, I think
sad.
He's quite optimistic, but I just don't... He thinks we can save the world by just getting rid of capitalism and all banding together. I just don't really see that happening.
I'm not even
enough.
Sure if that's right, but I'd love to have the argument from massive ignorance. I'm just not... Every now and then I read something by someone that I think is very, very bright and I think, oh, shit, you're really, you think, you're quite Pollyanna-ish. Like, you think humans are lovely. Fuck. So your house on the hill, your, you know, golden fucking light on the hill involves humans not being primates, not being fundamentally competitive, sexually competitive, competitive for resources, driven by every... I mean, maybe my friend Adam Rutherford argue with me and say I'm doing evolutionary psychology and it's bullshit, but I feel like any system that doesn't acknowledge our competitiveness is doomed, isn't it? I mean,
I just think
probably massively...
I can't see... I think eventually common sense will kick in, but it will take things going so wrong that it'll be too late.
I don't think common sense will kick in. I don't know, has common sense ever kicked in? I mean,
when things are...
Fighting the Nazis wasn't common sense. It was nationalism pressed into service of something. You know, like, I'm not sure it's common sense. It's...
Well, we know, he's... I was saying, you know, people who are capitalist, if the world's destroyed, then, you know, it's not good. You have use having lots of money, is it? There's going to come a point where money's worthless.
So that's self...
Yeah, so there'll come a point where they'll go, fuck, my money's going to be worthless if we don't do something about this. It might be worth tossing off a couple of million off these 55 billion.
I think in terms of sustainable energy and stuff, it's already tipped. We're on our way. Yeah. It's just that it's too slow and there's too many people trying to hold it back. I think we're going in the right direction. It's just really, really too slow. So market forces aren't making it move fast enough, and I'm not sure all our screaming and Greta are going to make it move much faster. But it's better this year. It is acknowledgement of climate science data is surely a lot better this year than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That's
his argument, that Extinction Rebellion have already done quite a lot in a very short time.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of raising awareness. Let's move on. It was depressing enough yesterday. You're more depressing than George because
I'm depressing, but without any knowledge. Ignorant and depressing. It's like watching Parliament.
You were very inspirational in your. I mean, it's a while ago. The one I watched you when you were doing the, I don't know what it's called, valedictory speech to the students.
Funny hat talk.
Funny hat, red coat, gown.
Yeah.
Do you get to do that sort of stuff a lot?
Done a few of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three, I think. It's three a few.
Do you do the same speech? Or have you
roll it out. No, I did a speech on the set of Matilda.
Right.
Like Alan Sugar. Yeah. I just took Alan Sugar quotes. But I did a speech for Mount View grads about being an actor, and it was quite like, being an actor is shit. You should do something else. It's quite a little bit contentious. And I just did one at my old uni in Perth, my other old uni in Perth.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a big honour to be asked to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's an exchange. I understand the nature of the exchange,
yeah.
Which is, we'll give you a fake degree, you give us a good speech, so get us some hits on the internet and maybe get a few students in.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's all right. I think the fake degrees are, I don't think they're meaningless. So they give people fake degrees if they think they've done stuff. Yeah. That's
have you hung up your fake degree?
I've got... I got four honorary doctorates. One I refused eventually because it's silly. But I don't know where they are, actually. No. They're somewhere, though. I think they're amazing. When I first got offered one, I went, oh, do I accept this? And Mum went, don't be a prick. Someone's, you know, like, just, it's... there's being sort of acknowledging the reality of it, and then there's just being a smug dick. Like, yeah. No one's getting hurt by someone saying you went to our uni and we think you did good at your stuff.
Yeah.
But I also like the opportunity to try and do a nice speech. It's a good challenge. It's like, you know, you scribble some things and... but I think there's a point at which... I mean, I feel that about this podcast too, and you can't tell because I talk so much, but I really hit a point where I'm like, I'm not that interesting. I need to shut the fuck up and stop, like, acting as if I know what I'm talking about. My skill is I'm able to structure sentences with endings.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like an avatar for wisdom. But it's not. There's nothing.
There's a lot of wisdom. These, you know, your songs are so beautiful, and always contain like fantastic lyrics, which is what fascinates me because I love words even more than music. But the lyrics are fantastic. But the ideas in them are. A dense, especially for, you know, a lot of songs.
For dense people.
Well, yeah.
Dense lyrics.
No, but
for
they're dense,
people,
they're dense and you don't get that in many songs.
No,
you don't get many songs that you can listen to 10 times in a row and get something out of.
Oh, good. Thanks for saying that. That's good. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Good.
That's good.
Carry on with it.
Can I go now?
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. But yeah, fuck, you get used to, you get asked to talk enough and you start thinking you've got something to say. Not necessarily the case.
It's not necessarily true, but you know, we have to pretend on this that we have, otherwise the whole thing falls apart.
Well, in my sort of, you know, what I was saying earlier about feeling both tiny status and high status at the same time, and I talk in my show about the balance between self-loathing and pride. In that balance is that I think I've got nothing to say, and most of the people saying shit are dumb as shit. So if we don't say something, then they'll just fill the fucking space.
It's good. I don't think we talked about this song before I was watching. It's a very big pleasure for me to do this podcast, as difficult it is doing six in 5 days. But
God. But I lost a movie, man.
But I wrote something for Channel 4 and then they didn't make it.
My dog has anxiety issues.
I loved what the one about Sam's mum's, thank you God for mum's cataracts.
Yeah, that's in the tour. That's one of the old songs in the tour.
It's a great song. Well, it's like, it's so mean as well, but in a really great way.
Yeah.
Is it a real... Will
it's
Sam...
Like James O'Brien.
Will Sam recognise himself? Will Sam...
No, I don't know. I don't know if Sam looks at that stuff.
No.
It's a problem with our Prime Minister. I think about Scott Morrison. I think all week he's in Canberra just talking to people who want something from him. And on the weekend, when you think maybe the Prime Minister will be like reading an interesting book, he's literally doing the... proper Hillsong Church, you know, pray for rain, proper literal Jesus stuff. And you think, when are you going to have any thoughts? You know, where's the data that's going in that's helping expand your worldview? Yeah. Why did I talk about the Prime Minister? I just totally...
Well, but it's that faith. I mean, I think faith...
Oh, yeah, Sam.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I think faith, I think religion's got the human race to where we are. I think we wouldn't have got here without religion.
Oh, yeah, it's been very functional.
But we won't get to the next bit with religion.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the problem. People believe that someone's going to come and rescue us, even if it might not be God, but they think science will come to the rescue or that someone will come and... Donald Trump will go, no, it's not. None of this stuff's true, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. What is true, I guess, is that stories are all we have. Like, and I've actually come to the point, having been quite sort of pragmatic and cynical about art, I've always been like, you know, people are like, yeah, art's, you know, really important. And I'm like, yeah, it's just like a job you can do and it's as important as anything. But I actually, it's not so much art, but stories are everything. So if we don't have the story of religion, what's the story we're telling ourselves? You know, we no longer... So Britain and America are trying to reassert the story of nationalism, which is an arbitrary boundary based on space, or based on arbitrarily fought for borders. But we're trying to reassert the idea of nationalism because we think that's the story that helped us through the last challenge. What did you say? You all come to our senses. What actually we did is we gathered together under a flag, an arbitrary story, a bunch of lines that someone drew in their fucking study one day. And so nationalism as a story has been useful. Religion as a story has been useful. What we need to get to, quick smart, is the story that the human race requires each other to face the big challenges, which at the moment is, apart from the ones that are getting old but are still a problem, like nuclear proliferation, is climate. And we are so, unfortunately, the old good stories, the old useful stories, are a barrier to the new useful story because nationalism required us to be parochial and racist. And, you know, some of these old boys still, the way they talk about, you know, the way the fucking those Sunday Mail or whatever the hell talks about Germany as if we're still in the Second World War. It's insane. Yeah. They're still talking about the Krauts and doing pictures of, you know, Angela Merkel with the spike on her helmet. It's like they're children still trying to assert a story that's no longer useful, but that is the thing in between us and the new story, which is the human race is the new tribe, and without each other we will die.
Yeah.
How do you tell that story?
Yeah, well...
Don't you clap at me. I don't know where you're from. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
But we have all the, you know, but we do have the we have the internet in place. You know, we could communicate with anyone in the world. You would think that we thought would have saved us.
We thought that was going to break down the barriers.
Yeah.
No, the internet has made us more trouble.
This podcast is going to do it.
This podcast
is going to go all around the world. We're going to translate into every language.
So I talk a bit. I talk a bit in my show about empathy and like and about public shaming and I do understand that you know, privileged white guys going on about how public shaming is the problem. It gets you slammed because it's like public shaming is not the problem. The fuckheads we're shaming are the problem. You know, it's easy for you to look and. But I do. I am trying to find a way to talk about how anger can't be the only mechanism for change. In our progressive mob, it seems to be quite cool to explicitly say, "I don't care how that person feels. I'm going to fucking destroy them because they are fascists," or whatever the narrative is. And it's like, man, wow. So the thesis is, the hypothesis is, oppressing my empathy for people who don't know what I know or don't feel what I feel or haven't read what I've read is the mechanism by which we're going to move forward. It feels intuitively problematic, doesn't it?
Like, it does, yeah.
Yeah, let's make sure we don't feel anything for that white middle American guy who has never met a gay person or whatever the fuck their ignorance is.
Yeah.
The challenge for progressives is not just to be empathic for death row inmates and, you know, the things that are our things we're really good at being, but to be empathic for a racist. That's our job, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we got education.
It's true. Well, let me tell you...
A little bit, anyway.
A little bit.
In Richard's case.
I have some, but it's all fallen out of my head as a result of being stupid for 30 years. I've pretended to be stupid so long I've become stupid. It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. Where are we? Oh, my goodness. It's flown
I've
by.
I've ground this down.
No,
I?
It's good.
I do that these
it's
days.
It's all right. I'm 44. I can dig us out of anything. I'll find a way.
Sarah Pascoe.
Oh, it's going to be another serious one with her. I feel sorry for the people at home who've got to listen to four
fucking serious maybe podcast that's, in
they,
a row.
That, maybe they want that. Maybe yeah, they're sick of your flippant nonsense.
About time. Let's see if they are.
We'll test them.
I've asked you that question before, so I haven't asked you many. Here's a question. here's a question. Have you ever been in a motorboat? There you go. That's going to save us.
What?
I don't know. I don't know what a motorboat is. Yeah, I've never been in one.
I've been on a motorboat. What do you mean you've never been on a motorboat?
I don't think I've been on a motorboat.
Have you been on any sort of boat?
I've been in
a rowboat. Canoe?
I've been in a canoe. I've rowed in a fake Oxford Cambridge boat race with Toby Young and Connie Huck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How did Toby and Connie get on?
They had to be kept in different boats.
So. Yeah, that's right.
Toby's insistence.
Which one's the Cox?
Jonathan Aitken was there as well. It was a merry mix.
Yeah.
Of despicable
but
people.
Never with a motor.
I don't think with a motor. I don't think I've done the motor.
That's fucking weird. How do you get across water?
I just fly.
Yeah. And, oh, I guess. Yeah.
Does a ferry count as a motorboat?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I've been in a motorboat.
Yeah, well, that's... It's a big motorboat.
I've been in a ferry.
I think a ferry is a motorboat. Yeah. You mean like...
I mean like... Have you ever...
I've been in all those boats.
Have you ever water skied?
Not successfully.
Okay.
I tried when I was very young.
Okay.
And I've like... I've stood up on a surfboard behind a boat.
Have you?
Does that count?
Yeah, definitely.
Have you snow skied?
I'm really bad. If you go online and put Rich Herring skiing into YouTube, you'll find my most successful attempt at skiing where I seem not to be moving, but I'm very slowly moving, and then somehow still manage to trip over my skis.
I think you're going to become a good skier in the future.
I'm really not. I've been twice. My wife, who I know you love, and I hope you look. If I die, I hope you will look after her and my children.
I'm going to look after her, fine.
She likes skiing and wants to go skiing.
I will go skiing with your wife.
You two go skiing.
I'm very happy to go skiing with your wife.
I'll look after
my
kids.
Wife and I will go skiing with your wife. And by skiing, I mean snowboarding.
I didn't like it. I don't like skiing. I don't think I'd like snowboarding.
You don't like motorboats?
I don't. Well, no one's offered to take me on one. If anyone's listening at home, wants to...
Come and visit me in Sydney, I'll take you on a motorbike.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's a date. It's definitely going to happen. All right. This is the question that's going to rescue this podcast, and people are going to be talking about this.
No, I haven't done a podcast that needs rescuing. Yeah,
It's been... I guess the last time you were on was Matilda. This is like Groundhog Day.
You know what you're going to get when you invite me on the podcast. You're so handsome on the sleeve of that book. You were so handsome. You're still quite beautiful.
What happened?
But we're old.
You're not. You're still young. You're still looking young.
I look pink. I get hot.
Whatever age you are now, Tim.
I know, you have to. It's not getting better, is it?
Because it then gets much, much worse.
44
is great. 44, yeah. 44 is probably just the end of great.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I feel.
You've probably got one more good year, and then it's...
Okay. Well, I'm going to thrash it. I'm going to thrash
the shit. You're looking good. And I was probably about 44 in that photo.
Yeah, you look much...
I look different, don't I?
Better.
It is better.
Greyness is tough, isn't it?
It is. It is, but you know, but getting old's tough because you sort of still feel like they'll just go, all right, you're allowed to be young again. Yeah. Now you get another... You're back to 30 again now. Off you go. You still feel that's going to happen. And then you go, oh, no, that isn't... I'm not ever going to be young again. They're not going to let me go back.
Yeah, women talk a lot about how... My wife is a bit old, my age. And definitely that the feeling of not being noticed is... You know, she's... beautiful and lovely looking. I mean, she's not your wife, but trying to just count the levels on which that's wrong. She's beautiful,
yeah.
and she's never, beauty hasn't been her main thing, but definitely she went, oh fuck, I feel it had a big effect. And do you think it's bigger for women? I suppose it is bigger for women, or do men just not talk about it?
I think it happens to men. You know, I do feel it. It's a stupid thing because it's absolutely an ego thing where you go, I just want like to be like fancy. I just want someone to fancy me.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, and it's slightly annoying that they don't. You're not noticed. You know,
yeah.
You're sitting in a cafe and there's a couple of pretty young women there, and you're sort of smiling at them, and you think, oh no, fuck, I'm like a really creepy old man. I'm just trying to be friendly. I'm not trying to pick you up, but you know.
Gay dudes would like you though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. Oh yeah, they love me.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, I would, you know, I would just like the opportunity to prove to my wife how much I love her.
You know your friends who are in, like, who have normal jobs? I think there's an egotism and a sort of, in our industry where you're used to people looking at you, whatever. But I have friends who, like, turned about 35 and just went, eh, fuck it. Just bam, hair fell out. And they just don't. They're just really happy.
Yeah.
Really happy with their wives and their big bellies. And maybe every now and then they'll go on a motorboat and they'll just like work. And they're just that it doesn't bother them in the slightest. I think it's solipsism.
I've been on a motorboat. I remembered when I went on a motorboat.
I knew you'd been on a motorboat.
You were brilliant.
I knew you had.
Been on a motorboat.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Have You Been on a Motorboat with Richard Harris?
I've been on a motorboat.
And this is where we bring out the captain on the motorboat.
I've been on a motorboat with a man in Finland who was the Finnish me when they did Talking Cock in Finland. Oh, that was a great weekend I had in Finland. I went to Finland. They put on my show in an incomprehensible language. It went really well. A really beautiful woman had sex with me after the show.
Amazing.
It was awesome.
A Finn?
Yeah, Finnish, beautiful Finnish woman had
Never
sex
had
with
sex
me.
Sex with a Finn.
And then I went on a motorboat the next day. We ate sausages on a beach. And
I love that you had forgotten
I've forgotten it. It's wonderful.
I mean, that is a much better motorboat experience. When I went on a motorboat, I had not been fucked by a Finn. And I remember mine. I think I might have been jerked off by a Perth girl. But... At best.
If you're listening, Paula, hello. It was a nice... She didn't... I was annoyed, though, because I tried to... It was there for two nights, and I tried to hook up with her again the second night.
Paula?
Yeah, Paula. She didn't want to see me again the second night. But then we corresponded via... Like probably MySpace. It was a while ago. It was
via Google
Translate. It was pre my wife, I should mention. It was some good time ago.
No.
I was
You're
young
a good
beautiful.
Man.
I was young and beautiful.
Since you got married, you have never been on a motorboat.
I can't believe I forgot that motorboat. Well, we bet. So, you know, sometimes the emergency questions you think that's not going anywhere, they're the ones that
and
really
it ends
open,
up on a beach
up.
Eating yeah, sausages with a post-coital Finn.
Hungover with some fat Finnish men.
What?
I could have been.
You didn't tell me about that.
I wasn't on the motorbike. I was on a motorbike with a guy who'd been in the show and a couple of his mates.
Oh,
and it was only when I was, like, on the island, I thought, oh... I don't really know who these people are. These people in Finland have taken me to a remote island in Finland to eat sausages.
Yeah. Yeah.
After I've just had sex with one of their women and they know it, they know what I've done.
One of their women? Richard Herring. I don't think the Scandinavians still own women.
They do. They're very Viking. Anyway, happy
way
days.
Viking.
Yeah.
I feel sad. I was in Cardiff this morning.
Thank you for coming to do this.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
It was really nice of
you. It was 70% a pleasure.
It's been lovely. You're always awesome. What's coming up that you can tell us about? Anything that just more of the tour? You're touring in Australia. This is going out in about 6 or 7 months' time, by the way.
Oh, really? Well, it's not much use then. But I've made a TV show that it's my favourite thing I've ever been involved in called Upright. Mm. Yeah. It's on the 28th of November on Sky Atlantic.
Okay.
Or Now TV, which you can trial for free and watch my show and then let it go. Okay.
Don't do a free advert for them. They sometimes pay us to say that. So
But yeah, it's a good. It's a like I helped write it and I was in it and stuff. It's like it's the opposite. The script was everything, and then we filmed it, and then at the end, it looked like the script, but on telly.
Yeah. It's about taking a piano across Australia.
About taking a piano across Australia. Yeah. It's not really about that, though, is it?
No.
It's a metaphor, isn't it?
Oh, I'm not as interested in that. I like that.
No, it's actually about a
mainly
piano.
Mainly transporting a piano.
It's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you hate it, in which case...
I'll go to watch it and I'll let you know the next time you come on.
Yeah, I'll send it to you ahead of time so you can tell your friends.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a massive round of applause, Tim Mitchell! Thank you very much. We'll be back next week.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Tim Minchin. Thank you very much to Pest for letting us use this music. I'm going to level with you. They don't record it every week. It's a record. You can get them in the shops. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having us back after all this time. Thank you very much to Chris Evans, Not That One, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. I'm indebted to everyone at Acast. I'm also indebted, of course, to my producer, Ben Walker, the executive producer this week. What a fellow he was, quite the dandy. Well, he's called Andy Wilson. I call him Dandy Wilson behind his back, but it's kind of a compliment, so I should do it to his face. Thanks, Andy, for exec producing this week's episode. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not just become a bloody monthly badger? GoFasterStripe.com/badges. £3 a month, you're getting 8 podcasts a week. But a month at the moment, that's crazy. Plus loads of other extra stuff, and you get loads of extras if you become one of our lovely badges. Why don't you do it? You know you want to. You love it. You love it. Bye.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.